So we are continuing the Doctrine of the Church class. And what did we study last week as the Doctrine of the Church? Anybody remember? What part of the Doctrine of the Church? Nice and loud.
The government.
The government, that's right. And what part of the government did we study last week? The Church's government, yes, yes. But what part of the Church's government?
The head.
The head, that's right. Who's the head of the Church's government? Christ, that's right. And we said ultimately the Church's government is a monarchy. You know, we have a king. We have one who is sovereign over all, Lord of lords, King of kings. And today we're going to now talk about, we mentioned that head, that king, has been ruling his church by his word and by his spirit, but that he also does that through officers in the church. And those officers are servants on his behalf to the degree that they are faithful to his calling and commands. And so we're going to talk about the officers that we find in the church. And we're especially talking under the new covenant. What are the officers we find in the church? We're going to talk about three officers today: the elders, the ministers, and the deacons. You might also, we'll mention something we're going to refer to as the general office of believers. In other words, to acknowledge that every believer has been gifted for service in Christ's church in varying ways. And so we'll talk about these roles, these officers. And depending on the time, we're going to ultimately, whether we do it today or next week, talk about the three main forms of government that we find within the church. Acknowledging that, yes, it's ultimately a monarchy, and how then that monarchy exercises its rule, we see that churches have, trying to follow the Bible, come up with a form of government to involve these officers. And we're going to talk about the three main forms and argue for one of those forms, which is the Presbyterian form, as the one that does the best justice to the biblical data. But we'll start with first discussing the offices. Why don't we turn over to 1 Timothy 3 to begin? We're going to talk first a little bit about elders. Just to begin to note, in the Old Testament, there were elders. In the New Testament, there continue to be elders. So this is something that, as we think about the form of church government, we realize this is something that definitely has always been present in the life of the church, at least under the Mosaic Covenant on into the New Covenant here today. Here in 1 Timothy 3, we see explicit reference to establishing elders in the church. This is Paul writing to Timothy, and Timothy is instructed to appoint elders. And we'll see in a few moments here, he's instructed to appoint deacons as well. Why don't we look at verses 1 through 7? Who has that? Julie.
Here is a trustworthy saying: if anyone sets his heart on being an overseer, he desires a noble task. Now the overseer must be above reproach, the husband of but one wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectful, hospitable, able to teach, not given to much wine, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may be conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must also have a good reputation with outsiders so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap.
Okay, good. So here we see a reference to the establishment. In verse 1 it talks of overseers, Everyone see that? Do your translations all say overseers? Didn't even say anything else. Bishops. The Pew Bibles say bishop. Just to introduce you to terminology, we see sometimes the reference of overseer and elder. And I don't know if I spelled that right. It's S-E-E-R, S-E-A-R. 2 weeks. I did it right. Okay. Sometimes you'll see a bishop for overseer. You rarely would see this in a translation, presbyter. But there's two Greek words involved in these passages that I'm going to argue are seem to generally be dealing with what we refer to as elders. Sometimes it'll be translated as overseer, sometimes it'll be translated as elder, but the Greek is presbyter or bishop. And this does have some influence on some of the discussion when you get into the forms of government. Some of the forms of government suggest that we should see those as two different things. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about how in the scriptures we see, at least at some point, they seem to be treated as synonyms. So for the sake of discussion now, my point is I think we should see the passage we just read under this category, generally speaking, of elders. And as we'll talk about in a moment, that it applies to the ministers as well. Different descriptions of their qualifications that they need to have. Now, I would not say this is an exhaustive list, but it's a good summary list. You search the scriptures and you find what does the Bible say an elder, what qualities, qualifications they should have. We find that in there. One of the things that we see here is this need to be able to rule in the church, like in verse 5. If he can't rule in his own house, well, how's he going to rule in the church? And the idea of the ability to be able to teach in verse 2, this starts to get at some of the functions of the elder. And again, we could spend lots of time just focusing in on all the places in the Bible on the work and role of elder. For sake of giving an overview to start, we're going to stay on the high level, which is that the elders, particularly in the New Covenant, are the ones that are ruling in the church, who are involved in judicial matters from an official standpoint. They also have a teaching component. But then we introduce this idea of minister down here. And I don't know if you're familiar with OPC circles, our denomination. There's often, in Reformed circles, a question of, are there two officers in the church or three officers in the church? Now, this may be a debate you have never heard of. I'm just interested. Have you ever heard the two-office view versus the three-office view? Anyone? I've seen a few people. Okay. The question becomes, in the New Covenant Church, are there two offices? In other words, this is really one office, and this is one office, deacons. And so elder, deacon are the two offices. Or are there three offices? One, two, three. And anybody know what the OPC's kind of general viewpoint is on this? What do you think? What's that? Well, the OPC is kind of divided in some regard on it. If you read our Constitution, it does outline three different offices. But when you look at the details, elders and ministers have a lot in common. Sometimes people have joked around and called it the two-and-a-half office view. At the end of the day, whether you hold a three-office view or a two-office view, it doesn't necessarily have to have that much difference in how it is in practice, though sometimes it is in practice executed very differently. What becomes more important is what are you having those different offices do. But flip over to 1 Timothy 5:17. So if you're in 1 Timothy, flip the page. Who's got that for me? Jillian. Okay, good. This might be a passage that both the two-office view and the three-office view people are glad to embrace, and I think it also gets at the heart where there's not necessarily that much of a big divide here. That passage says that there are elders, but some elders who do what?
Preach and teach.
Who preach and teach. That's what the OPC and others who emphasize the office of minister, that's what that job is. And sometimes you'll see minister referred to as pastor, for example. Evangelist, you'll sometimes see that language too. In the OPC, we make a fine distinction between pastor and evangelist. What do you think with the difference we see between the two? Close. Very, or pretty much the right answer. In the OPC, we call our missionaries that are out to plant churches, we call them evangelists. And a pastor is one who's in an established church preaching. And usually then a pastor is going to be working with elders and have an actual session of elders that they're working with, which is an evangelist, is in a sense usually on his own. Timothy is referred to by Paul as an evangelist. He says, do the work of evangelist. Part of that work here, according to 1 Timothy, is to appoint elders and deacons. And at that point, you know, from our OPC kind of way about doing it, then you transfer from being an evangelist to a pastor. But at the end of the day, the work really is all similar, right, as a minister. So in this structure, ministers are elders, to clarify. They rule in the church as elders. And, like, for example, we have a board of elders, and, you know, we have Jeff and Marlon and myself are on there. I would be considered a minister from the OPC official terminology, but I would have an equal vote on that board of elders. But what in the OPC and the views that take a distinctive view on the minister, the minister's focus is word and sacrament. In other words, that... I'm the one, obviously, up there preaching every Sunday, administering the sacraments, that's what I particularly labor in. It doesn't mean that our elders don't have times where they will teach. They do. It doesn't mean that I, as a minister, won't be involved in the ruling and the judicial aspects. I will. But my particular focus, and even my training and preparation, has been on ministry of word and sacrament. 1 Timothy 5 there, that reference, does acknowledge that there are some of these elders who focus on that. Versus when we look at elders in the Bible, they don't always seem to be always focusing on word and sacrament sort of preaching. They're often just described in terms of their ruling and making decisions in the church. Maybe a similar example, Peter. Peter calls himself an elder in one of his letters. But obviously Peter is also an apostle, a preacher, a teacher of the word, etc. Questions so far on any of these distinctions I've begun to throw out on you there? Okay. I'm just going to reference a couple other passages here. 2 Timothy 1:11, Paul says that he was appointed a preacher, an apostle, and a teacher. If you're going toward a three-office view, you realize there are some particularly gifted as preachers and teachers. And, you know, we don't normally think of elders as the preachers. We tend to think of the ministers as the preachers. Something similar, Ephesians 4:11, he himself, talking Christ, gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. And so again, there you see the idea. It mentions evangelist and pastor and as well teacher. And you know, we want to be able to do justice in the officers of the church to represent that some are given as preachers, evangelists, pastors, that kind of role. And so on the three office view, that falls into this minister category. They're the ones, according to 1 Timothy 5, who labor in the word and in the proclamation of the word. Good. So, a minister is an elder, but he has these special things he particularly focuses on, labors on, that the other elders would not do in that regard. Okay, Good. Any other questions on minister? Otherwise, I'm going to jump into deacons here for a moment here. Okay. So, we've been reading in 1 Timothy. Go back to chapter 3. Look at verses 8 through 13. This now is a description of the deacons that ought to be appointed. Who's got 8 through 13 for me?